This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. I got another hour of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with Barry Craig, confidential investigator. We'll hear his episode titled The 13th Guest from August 9th, 1953. After that, it's Mr. District Attorney and the Case of the Blood Harvest, his episode from January 18th, 1953.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
There's one chap around who never fails to electrify you. He sure can turn it on and turn it off. Am I referring to the state executioner, I wonder?
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. A confidential cop enjoys a certain public popularity. He gets haberdasher's circulars in the mail, anonymous threatening letters scented with perfume, and he gets invited to parties. A fancy shindig is thrown somewhere, a special invitation is tossed at the cop, and no RSVP to it. The host wants you so badly, he comes your way to invite you in person. My would-be host in this one was Badger Boris, the sort of guy newspaper society columns call a bon vivant in French. Bon vivant meaning Boris slept all day and stayed up all night. And when the cabbage got thin, all he had to do was go to the bank. The short, moon-faced guy who looked like a cherub weaned on pasteurized champagne.
You will, of course, be paid handsomely, Mr. Craig.
Paid yet for coming to your big blowout. Now I'm really overwhelmed. Stand aside for a body fall.
Then you agree to come.
After you give me the other inducements.
Well, fine foods. I've ordered 200 pounds of buffalo steak.
What do I wash it down with?
Liqueur Quisette.
What's that?
A Mohammedan beverage. I had it specially flown here from Istanbul.
What's for dessert?
Raisin cake. A plebeian touch to offset the noxious effects of a too rich repast.
Rich? I just felt the whack of that word. How prosperous will I be going home in the early a.m.?
Your fee will be $1,000.
Money flown in from Istanbul?
Oh, no. American money.
I'm your slave, Sahib. Sketch out the requirements of my assignment now.
Well, I'm giving an intimate costume party for certain selected friends. A masquerade, you understand. You've perhaps read about other famous parties I've given in the past.
Who hasn't? Your parties generally make the front pages and the police blotter. Brawls. They always break up in bloody brawls.
You are, unfortunately, accurate. You will circulate with the guests, and when you sense that any of them are becoming too disputatious...
Too hotted up.
You will then exercise a tranquilizing influence.
Exactly what do I do there?
Well, strictly entre nous, a blow shrewdly delivered to the stomach, say, where the damage cannot be seen. I don't want a lawsuit against me.
Where do I cart the horizontal guest? After I stiffen him.
I have an emergency room set aside. You'll find bandages, smelling salts, and restoratives in it.
Well, that's my job. Bouncer with kid gloves.
And a tuxedo. You must wear a tuxedo. And, of course, a mask. You were an honored guest, too. Oh, and one other small chore.
Don't tell me. Dilettantes, you said. On my side of the street, we call them deadbeats and freeloaders. They live piling up IOUs. A party sideline with them sometimes is palming somebody's jewels or wallet.
Yes. You will prevent any theft. I don't want that disgrace. Well, are we agreed?
One item remains. I'll need $10 on account. On account of I've got to rent a tux. I attended the party wearing a straitjacket, a tuxedo, a mask, and a noose around my neck. That would be the black bow tie. An intimate crowd like Badger Boris had promised. Everybody in costume and mask. And all of them milling around the food and drink, and each other. I got up on a balcony for a better view of the menagerie. Up on the balcony with me was a society photographer. A guy in striped pants who looked like an unemployed diplomat. He was taking flashbulb pictures. I watched him until I felt a hot breath on my neck.
Mr. Craig.
Oh, how are you, boss?
Call me Mr. Boris, please. I dislike informality.
You've got a problem?
This is the wrong station for you, here on the balcony.
It is?
I don't like you looking down on my guests.
I'm not. They're looking up to me.
Mingling with them, you can overhear and anticipate. Prevent any disorder by forestalling it.
Okay, I'll get down off my perch.
Besides, the ladies below resent the standoffish male. You must dance with them and flatter them and be witty.
Witty? Say, can you tell me a few fast jokes? I got down and mingled. I wrestled through a few dances with a lady who had one stomach in front of her and one in reserve. She was costumed as a witch and wore a pink mask.
You dance beautifully, Mr.
No name dropping. Everybody's incognito until midnight. That's how Boris wants it. This step I'm doing, lady,
Yes?
It's a one step. My grandfather had no further use for it, so he gave it to me.
I love being gay.
Oh, do you, my potted flower?
You're witty. It is a sharp rapier thrust.
Don't let me slice off too much of your funny bone now. Shall we trip it over to the punch bowl?
No. I prefer this intoxication. Your strong arms.
My barking dogs. Lady, once more around, I'll need an oxygen tent.
Why, you are unusually winded. All right, you rest somewhere. My headdress is awry. I'll go repair it.
Godspeed and amen.
We'll meet out on the patio in 5 minutes.
Oh, 20. I don't want to overdo this.
In 20 minutes. It will be midnight then. We'll unmask together.
A rendezvous on the patio. Two alone under the moon. Me and an oversized dame dying to kick me around for kicks. Earning a living sure came hard. Midnight happened, like it usually does. I sneaked off to look for my witch on the patio. The patio was sleek flagstone with a floral display on it, like a high-class funeral parlor. It was a moon that had a bloodshot look to it, as if it didn't sleep days. It was a small wind that poets and advertising copywriters like to call zephyrs. I found my bewitching witch on a love seat swing made out of wrought iron. She had her arms outstretched, like a snake about to give you constrictions. The rest of her was in a sprawl. When I reached her, my worries ceased. She wasn't being amorous. She was asleep, as if she'd passed out. 2 seconds later, I changed my diagnosis. She was in another condition altogether. She was defunct, dead. There was blood all over her costume, like she'd been stabbed over the heart by a knife or a dagger. But the weapon wasn't around, at least I couldn't see it. But then the way the situation stacked up, I had eyes only for the corpse. I conducted some postmortems with my client, Badger Boris. I checked over his guest list. 12 guests. Is that the net count, Boris?
Yes, 12 excluding you, Mr. Craig. But then you weren't really a guest.
Who was the murder victim?
Cora Wilmer.
Cora Wilmer. Let me see. I don't find her name on your guest list. How come?
Cora Wilmer, the late Cora Wilmer, I mean, crashed the party. Symbolically enough, she was the 13th guest.
Tell me about Cora.
Gross, foolish, and very rich. A middle-aged matron, miserably in quest of the elixir of youth.
Chop it up.
Cora was 50. She affected the mannerisms of 20.
That sounds like a young husband in the picture she was trying to keep up with.
Astute of you. Yes, there was a younger husband. A bit player in theatricals whose dream is to play Hamlet, the melancholy Dane.
Was he here tonight?
You have the guest list.
Yeah. Mark Wilmer. What costume was he wearing?
I've already given you a clue.
Hamlet, the melancholy great Dane. How did Cora and Mark feel about each other, or don't you know?
I would venture that they despised each other. May and December, Mr. Craig. The seasons are inimical and antithetical.
You keep clobbering me with words. Call Mark Wilmer in here for a little questioning.
Oh, I can't. He's gone home.
I gave orders. Nobody leaves.
Mark Wilmer, or any of my guests, don't respond to orders, as you will discover.
Call a crash, you say. But Mark was an invited guest. Then who came coupled with Mark?
Oh, the Queen of Sheba.
Yeah, I saw the costume. A dish in harem silk with a ruby glued to her forehead. Who is she on this guest list?
Rita Romaine.
A heat wave?
Yes, if you must express it so commonly. She was the poster girl for the Inter-Allied Fruit Pickers Convention last year. Boat manufacturers proclaimed her Miss Cabin Cruiser of 1953. And Mark nominated her to be Queen Empress of his heart, soul, and liver.
You're trying awfully hard to supply me with a motive, Boris.
Am I? And I thought I was being so ingeniously subtle.
A May-December marriage that ended in divorce by murder, and a doll who won the hearts of married men. I hurried over to the Wilmer house. There was a wind nipping it up, the parlor floor lights were on brightly, and a piano was going. A late hour, kind of, for a piano. It was 4 a.m. I decided not to announce myself. Instead, I crossed the big lawn and found a station just outside the big French window. There was a hard-looking character inside, standing over the pianist. He had the look of a private eye. I made that guess anyhow. I also guessed the pianist to be the new widower, Mark Wilmer. I got an earful.
Wilmer.
Yes?
You're ignoring me, Sonny. You got lost in Beethoven.
Liszt. I'm playing Liszt.
Now let's start playing truth or consequences, huh? I hear I lost a rich client.
Yes, you have. Corey's dead. But you have a new client now.
It's you.
Yes, me.
Sounds like you're trying to bribe me.
I'll be accused of it. They'll say I murdered my wife for her money.
Money? And how? A lot of loot falls into your lap.
They'll say I did it to be free to marry Rita Romaine. That I was secretly in love with Rita.
Which you are, Sonny.
They'll subpoena Gurko, a private detective, and put him on the witness stand.
And I'll testify the late Cora Wilmer hired me on the QT. I was to check with her once every 24 hours and see if she was still alive. She was that scared.
Cora pretended her fear to humiliate me.
I've got other facts, Sonny, in my little notebook. I read this off to the court. February 16th at 10 p.m., the defendant, Mark Wilmer, attempted strangling his wife, Cora. Dr. Enright treated her for throat bruises and shock.
Cora baited me into assaulting her to hold a weapon over me, to keep me from ever leaving her.
Maybe, but who'll believe you?
That's why you're working for me now.
Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. You know, what you're asking is a lot, Sonny. I got a big investment in my license.
A lot of loot falls into my lap. How much do you like money, Gurko?
Oh, who doesn't like money? The bribe has to come pretty high for me to be tempted to forget my duty.
It will be high. Even higher than your dreams, Gurko.
The big bribe. Offer and acceptance. Some husbands had their own tender way of mourning the dead. I'd really gotten an earful. When the private-eyed Gurko had wrapped up his deal and scrammed, I walked in through the big French windows and introduced myself to Mark Wilmer.
Police persecution is beginning early.
Early? Your wife's very cold. She's been dead 100 years.
I don't like your informal entrance, Mr. Craig.
Next murder, I'll come down the chimney.
How long have you been outside those windows?
How long? Oh, I only just arrived. Now, that's a funny question.
Please get your business over with. I'm dog-tired and verging on collapse.
The $64 question. Answer it for me.
I did not murder Cora Wilmer.
You had motive to. Your marriage wasn't too divine. There was another woman in your life.
We had certain incompatibilities, my wife Cora and I. But we reconciled them tonight. We made peace with each other, patched things up, decided to give ourselves another try.
But you escorted Rita Romaine to Boris's party.
That's untrue. I went to Boris's with my wife. I found Miss Romaine there.
That's your story.
That's the truth.
Boris says otherwise. Why would Boris lie?
Ask Boris.
I will. What made you reconcile with a wife you obviously, we'll say, disliked?
Futility. Cora couldn't be discarded decently in an adult way. She had a way of insinuating herself, taking hold and holding on. I couldn't stand up to the war against her. It was too too wearing, too morbid. I realized that and gave up trying to win my freedom from her.
You gave up Rita Romaine?
I gave up dreaming.
But now, with your wife conveniently dead...
My personal situation isn't improved. It's worse.
You mean jail?
I mean jail.
Not if you're innocent of murder.
That don't matter. I'll deny it, but I'll be condemned. The outlook is very black. I married for money. That's a count against me. I had violent scenes with my wife. I loved another woman. That will hang me.
Pretty fatalistic outlook.
I'm a realist. Hard luck has dogged me since I can remember. I'm never on top of a life situation. I've lived my life without a laugh, without a light moment.
I'll cry the day after tomorrow. You were Hamlet in costume at tonight's party.
Yes, I was. If you like, here it is.
The belt around the waist with the scabbard attached.
What about it?
The scabbard is empty. Where is the dagger that goes with it?
Dagger? I didn't know that there was it. Was that how Cora was murdered?
A dagger into the heart.
Oh, I told you I'd deny it, but I'd be condemned anyhow. A missing dagger in my costume. It's typical of my luck.
Then you won't try to explain it?
I can't explain it, Mr. Craig. I can't explain it because I simply don't know.
A guy on the edge of becoming delirious, you leave him for another day, a calmer time. Besides, I needed sleep myself. I got into my car. I just pulled away from the curb when I got notice that sleep was going to be a missing ingredient in my future. A try at murder number two. Yours truly, the victim. I drove around the block and around again with my headlights out. Watching for a car somewhere to come to light, start up and show the glow of its taillight. My car was the only way the rifleman could quit the area. The area was suburban, way off of the main hub. No taxis, no bus lines, and it was 4 a.m. Somebody had to try and escape by an automobile parked somewhere in the vicinity. All I had to do was cruise around and watch and hope. When I saw it, I saw the taillight first. A car starting up a half block away, pulling away from the curb. I raced over to it. I cut across its path, trapping it. A lady motorist took offense at what I'd done.
Mister, you're in my way.
That was the understatement of the century. I got out to go hunt for a rifle. Sorry to be so melodramatic, miss. Romaine, isn't it?
Yes. How did you know my name?
Search me. It was the first name that popped into my head. I want to look in the back of your car, beautiful.
You have no right.
Don't please overplay the indignation, doll. I'm a detective. I'm at work. Well, I don't find it.
Find what?
A rifle used on me a little while ago.
Oh, this whole thing is absurd.
Yes, isn't it? I'd apologize, only I found something even more exciting than a rifle.
You found something?
Right on the back seat, wedged into a cushion. A dagger, beautiful. More specifically, a bloodstained dagger. We kept company, the Queen of Sheba and me, in a roadside diner. We split a gallon of black coffee down the middle while she poured out her sad tale.
I tell you, I don't know how to explain that dagger, Mr. Craig.
Mr. Craig? It's too early in the morning for stiff formality.
Very.
What were you doing parked down the street from the Wilmer place?
I had gone to see Mark. How he was. Just outside, starting up his walk, I thought better of it. I looked too compromising at that hour. I changed my mind. I went back to my car.
You went to see Mark Wilmer hardly 2 hours after the murder of his wife?
Yes, I know it was terribly foolish, but I've never made a secret of my feeling for Mark.
So confess it to me.
I'm desperately in love with him. It's not so shameful as it seems. You see, I knew Mark first, before Cora did. We were engaged to be married. We had wonderful plans. Mark was afraid of our poverty. We were surely defeated because of the desperate lack of money, he said. Our marriage could not succeed. He kept adding postponement, until
Cora happened along.
Rich, possessive. She played on Mark's weakness. His insecurity, his overvalue of money.
She bought him.
Mark never really broke our engagement. He just eloped with Cora.
Why would your recent party host, Badger Boris, try to throw suspicion on Mark?
To hurt me, through Mark. Boris, well, he fancies me. I've laughed at his advances, turned down his proposals of marriage, but Boris doesn't forget, or even forgive. He harbors grudges. He's a horribly twisted egotist.
Did you go to the party with Mark Wilmer?
No, I came alone. Mark came with Cora.
And Boris did lie to me. I now have three capital suspects.
Three suspects?
Mark, wanting out of his marriage, out with profit. You to get rid of a rival who'd stolen your dearly beloved. And now Badger Boris to beat you over the head by framing the man you love. Now let's go, Dal.
I'm under arrest?
House custody. Your own house, this is. The dagger was too conveniently where I could find it. I don't think you could be that careless about a murder weapon. Or could you? While catching a snooze on my office chair, a visitor barged in. The private eye, Gurko, just a little tipsy, like he'd been celebrating something. Celebrating his windfall was my idea, but I wasn't saying it aloud.
Barry Craig?
None other than...
Well, hello, colleague. Gurko's the name. I'm a private dick like you.
The assumption is debatable.
I don't get the crack.
It's a delicate question of morals, but skip it. What brings you staggering?
I'm here to say my piece about Mark Wilmer.
So say it.
Wilmer is an okay guy. He's a good, upstanding man, I want you to know.
And very rich. That is, if he beats the electric chair.
I investigated Wilmer, turned him inside out. Not a spot on him, not a blemish. The boy can look the world square in the eye.
Goodbye.
I'm not finished.
You are. It's either out the door or throw it.
Oh, you're unsocial.
I don't like investigators who talk glibly in their own cause. Out.
You know something? You're nuts. Now, why did I come talk to a nut? The way I keep knocking myself out, defending people.
I got Boris on the phone.
Hello?
Boris, this is Barry Craig speaking.
Oh, you woke me up.
It's noon. Time to rise and shine.
What do you want?
Those party photographs I saw being taken last night. I want them.
Why?
Well, a lot of reasons. One of them is I want to see if Mark Wilmer wore a dagger and a scabbard on his costume.
I'm afraid I must disappoint you.
Meaning?
I destroyed the pictures.
Come again?
The party was such a distressing bore, Mr. Craig. Hardly worth the sentimental memorial of pictures. I dislike preserving dismal memories, so I destroyed the pictures. Do you find me eccentric?
Only phony. Phony is a $9 bill. Goodbye. I stopped in to see Badger Boris personally, without appointment.
You have no business molesting me.
I know. Home is your castle. The pictures are the negatives. I want them, Boris.
But I told you I destroyed them.
Yeah, you told me. The memory of last night is acid in your soul. So why preserve it? Cue that lip. You've got a genius for evasion. Now come across.
I'll have you thrown out of here.
We'll hit the sidewalk together. We ride downtown arm in arm. So close because we're handcuffed together. Let's measure your wrist for size.
You would dare handcuff me?
And arrest you. Suspicion of murder. You're sure going to look elegant penned up with the rabble. Well?
Well, you argue resourcefully. You've uncovered my one weak spot. I am allergic to odors. I could never tolerate the reek of your prison rabble. The negatives, you'll find them in that cabinet there. The bottom drawer. Take them and go.
I'll take them and go after you write a check for $1,000. My agreed fee for last night's rhubarb. Don't look so pained, host. I had the negatives developed. 8 rolls of them. I had them developed with a prayer. A prayer that my hunch on the film would pay off. When I got a look at the developed pictures, I went traveling. Downtown to a Park Row office with a shingle on it that read the Gurko Agency. I let myself in with a skeleton key to wait for Gurko. I wanted to surprise Gurko with a bang. Gurko rolled in at the stroke of three. I waited until his head showed. Then I came down on the target.
Oh!
When he came to enough to stare up at me groggily, we got down to cases.
You slugged me, Craig. Why?
Precaution to take the fight out of you. I checked into your background a bit. What you did before you became a blackmailing shamus. You were a champ boxer, runner-up for the light heavyweight title. I didn't relish coming to blows with you. I want my nose looking exactly like it looks.
What's your play?
An arrest. I'm arresting you for blackmail and murder.
I said you were a nut.
I developed rolls of film taken at Boris's costume party. Mark Wilmer never carried a dagger in the scabbard. I've got pictures covering the whole evening. No dagger ever in Mark Wilmer's costume.
So what?
Boris's guest list totaled 12, so Boris said. Boris was faking. It was actually 13, officially. He wanted me to think Cora Wilmer crashed the party, and that Mark Wilmer came with Rita.
All over my head, Craig.
Try getting up, I'll crack down on you. I've got pictures showing that there was even more than 13 guests. That's excluding me. On one picture, I count 14. 14 guests. The 14th was the murderer. Boris knew it, but he tried to cover it up. Not that he wanted to spare you, Gurko, but because he preferred seeing Mark Wilmer take the rap. He hoped to frame Mark. Your turn to talk.
Craig, what kind of guy are you?
Try me out.
That's better. I didn't figure you to be an angel. I didn't see any wings. 50-50. We'll split a fortune.
If I shut up about your murdering your own client, Cora Wilmer, so you could blackmail her widowed husband?
Yeah, that was the play. Mark was a frightened pigeon. Forget Cora, Craig. Nobody cried when she died. It comes out fine for everybody. Mark and the doll, Rita, they get married. They got dough. And you and me, we got dough.
It still needs a fall guy.
Boris, we'll pin it on Boris. We'll switch it around. Boris was out to frame a guy he hated, Mark Wilmer. I'll think up a way.
Like you planted the dagger in Rita's car?
Well, I did that to confuse things, take some of the heat off Mark.
And that rifle shot at me?
Well, that was to scare you away, only that. Hang the frame on Boris. Make him the fall guy. I think I know a way, Craig.
Don't pick your brains too hard. The little gray matter you've got, Gurko, concentrate on how you can beat the electric chair.
Oh. It's like that, eh? You suck at me. No deal. You're turning me in, huh?
That's right.
Why?
I could say for the honor of the profession, colleague. But, that would be corny, wouldn't it?
The National Broadcasting Company has brought you Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, starring William Gargan. Featured in the role of Rita was Jane Webb. Don Pardo speaking.
Mr. District Attorney, starring David Bryan. Mr. District Attorney, champion of the people, defender of truth, guardian of our fundamental rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And it shall be my duty as district attorney not only to prosecute to the limit of the law all persons accused of crimes perpetrated within this county, but to defend with equal vigor the rights and privileges of all its citizens. This is David Bryan. In a moment, we'll bring you another case from the files of Mr. District Attorney. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Now, here is our star, David Bryan, as Paul Garrett, Mr. District Attorney.
A knowledge of the law is a minor part of the qualifications of a district attorney, because enforcement of the law depends upon factors outside the law, things the district attorney must know or learn if the blindfold on justice is to be lifted. Take this case. It started late one night in the cultivated field in the farm area of the county.
How many more bales we got to load, Slim?
15, 20 left, that's all.
Well, this will be the last truckload, then.
Yeah. The sooner you get off the place with it, the better.
Mullen's sure going to be surprised when he gets a look at this field tomorrow.
What do we get for this stuff?
Yeah, market's about $30 a ton. Clear almost $200 a piece. Not as much as we could make stealing livestock.
Sure, steal livestock and get sent to the pen. Maybe there ain't as much money in alfalfa, but it ain't marked either. Nobody can say it ain't yours once you get in the clear with it.
You suppose Mullen suspects you had something to do with this?
Me? His old army buddy? Not a chance. Besides, he saw me take a sleeping pill before we turned in tonight. Mm. At least he thinks he saw me take it. Give me the pitchfork.
Here.
Push these bales back away from the tailgate.
Slim.
What's the matter?
Shh. I heard something moving over by the rack.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Mullen. Maybe he...
Keep quiet, Trent.
Who's out in this field?
It is him.
You better answer me. I can see the outline of your truck.
We better run for it.
No. No, he woke up. He must know I'm not in the house.
Who are you? Talk up. Fast.
It's me. It's me, Mullen. Harry Trent.
What's the matter, Trent? You lost or something? Your farm's on the other side of that fence. What are you doing in my field in the middle of the night? With a truck full of my alfalfa.
Why, I've been...
Save it, Trent. Just tell me where Slim is. Where'd that thieving rat run to?
I didn't run any place, Mullen.
You...
Don't move. That's a pitchfork you feel against your back. Now just march up to the house.
What are you going to do to him, Slim?
I'm going to lend him my bottle of sleeping pills and see to it that he takes an overdose of them. Nice, clean, and quiet.
Well, that'd be a great idea, Slim. If I'd hold still for it. But I ain't about to hold still.
Look out, Slim!
Let him, Trent. Hit him! Let go of that fork, Mullen. Oh. Now, Mullen, here's something you don't have to hold still for.
Oh. You maniac. Now what are we going to do?
Shut up. We're going to do just what we started to do. Get that load out of here and sell it like we planned. And keep your mouth shut. If you don't, I'll shut it for you. Now get going.
Ain't you coming?
Of course I'm not coming, stupid. I'm going into the house and back to bed, where I've been all night. Get going.
There's the body, Chief.
Who found it, Harrington?
Hound came across it earlier this morning. Set up a racket. Dog's owner knew by the way he was barking that something was up, so he came over.
And one of those men?
Yeah. Fellow in the Mackinac. Named Sam Richardson. His farmer joins this one along the east fence.
Who are the other two men?
Well, Harry Trent. Farm on the north is his. The skinny one is Slim Ferryman. He worked for Mullen, lives here on the place. Says he and Mullen were war buddies.
Find out if he has any family?
Just a sister, married. Name's Wharton, Ellie Wharton. She lives upstate someplace. We're trying to trace her.
Well, can't talk to her until we find her. You better talk to the neighbors now.
All right, Jinx. Jinx, lie down. He won't fight.
This is Mr. Garrett, the district attorney, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Hello. Howdy.
This is Sam Richardson, Chief. This one's Harry Trent, and this one is Slim Ferryman.
Hi.
Hello.
Gentlemen, I understand your dog found the body, Mr. Richardson.
That's right.
When did you last see Mullen alive?
Yesterday morning. Passed each other by the fence down there. Talked a minute or two.
Now, how about you, Mr. Trent?
Well, I ain't seen Mullen for a couple of days, I guess.
Slim seems to be the one who saw him last, Chief.
Except for whoever killed him, he means, Mr. Garrett.
I know what he means. Tell me about you while we walk over to the house.
Well, sure. I saw Mullen last night. We ate supper, and I turned in early.
Then this must have happened during the night.
Must have.
Why would Mullen come out to this field at night?
I don't know. I didn't even know he'd left the house until Richardson came pounding on the door and woke me up this morning after he found the body. Is that right, Sam?
That's right.
Well, how come you didn't hear Richardson's dog? Body's closer to where you were than where he was.
Well, I was sleeping kind of heavy. I took a sleeping pill last night. Must have knocked me out good. We put in a hard day yesterday.
Doing what?
Loading alfalfa from this field onto the truck. Me and Mullen must have moved about 200 bales.
Oh? Well, I was wondering why there were so few bales from such a large field. Only a dozen or so left.
Well, Mullen had a buyer for most of it, I guess. Anyhow, he spent the day trucking it away.
Tire tracks all over the field, too.
Any idea who Mullen sold his crop to, Slim?
He didn't say.
You think somebody might have paid for the stuff, Chief, then come back to rob him?
Yeah, that's it. Mullen made the robbing mighty convenient by coming out into this field at night.
There was no money on the body, Chief.
He may have hidden it in the house, or maybe he even had time to bank it yesterday. I want a thorough check made on it. If anybody...
Oh, that's the phone.
Hold it, Slim. I'll get it. You stay out here. Hello?
Mr. Garrett?
Oh, yes, Miss Minow.
We located Mullen's sister, Ellie Wharton.
Oh, good. Where is she?
A town called Haskell, about 40 miles upstate. The address is 414 Sycamore Street.
Has she been notified of her brother's death?
I called the local minister. Asked him to break it to her.
Oh, that's good. She may be in condition to talk by the time Harrington and I get there. I want you to call the lab. Have Fred Morgan set out here. Tell him to bring plaster of Paris, moulage equipment.
Yes, sir.
There are a lot of truck tire tracks in the field where Mullen was killed. I want castings made and compared with the tire tread on Mullen's own truck to make sure it was Mullen's truck.
Yes, sir.
And tell Fred to wait until evening to do it. I don't want anybody to see him.
I understand.
You know where to reach me. Ellie Wharton's in Haskell.
Yes, sir.
Who was it?
It was for me.
I'd like to get back to my farm if it's all right, Mr. Garrett.
Well, you can all go about your business for now. Come on, Harrington.
Where to, Chief?
Haskell, in upstate. We'll take the Bullen's sister.
You think she'll know anything?
I don't know. But Mullen's friends and neighbors don't seem to know much, do they?
Why? Why would anybody want to kill him?
Won't you sit down, Mrs. Wharton? Please.
I can't. He was here only last Sunday, spending the day with us. Playing with the baby and arguing with Dan.
Well, who was Dan?
My husband.
What were they arguing about, Mrs. Wharton?
Oh, I didn't mean a real argument. Politics, taxes. You know how men get to talking.
Do you know of anybody who might have gained anything by having your brother out of the way?
No, he never made any enemies.
The motive must have been robbery, Chief. The crop money.
Yes. I guess we'd better get back to town. Oh, you shouldn't be alone here, Mrs. Wharton.
The minister's coming back later.
Can't your husband come home from work?
He's away for a few days on a business trip.
Away? Where?
Buying crops. He works for the Haskell Feed and Grain Company.
Oh, I see. Well, goodbye, Mrs. Wharton.
Chief, that job her husband's got.
Yes, buying feed and grain crops.
Seems to me like Mullen would sell that alfalfa to his own brother-in-law.
Seems that way to me, too. We'll drive over to Haskell Feed and Grain. I noticed their storage elevators off the highway when we were coming in.
Wharton won't be there.
Well, no, but they might be able to tell us where to find him.
Almost 4 p.m., Chief.
We must have covered 50 farms since yesterday afternoon.
Well, Wharton's in this area someplace. Hey, look.
Huh? What?
Car parked outside of the barn up ahead.
Ah, that's it, all right. Haskell feed and grain emblem on the side of the door. I don't see anybody around.
He might be in the barn.
There he is. The other end of the barn, leaning on the stall. Must be the owner of the farm he's talking to.
Oh, he's seen us. Coming this way now. Watch him carefully, just in case.
Yep. You fellas looking for me?
You Dan Wharton?
That's right.
Would you mind telling us when you last saw your brother-in-law?
2 days ago, when I started on this trip.
You stopped by his place?
That's right.
Family call or business?
Business. Made a bid on his alfalfa. We just about finished sweating, ready to be hauled for storage.
Oh, how did you pay him for it? Cash or a company check?
I didn't pay him for it. He said it wasn't for sale.
You better be sure of that, mister.
What do you mean?
He means Mullen's alfalfa crop was sold and moved just before Mullen was killed. The night of the day you stopped there.
Whoever told you that is a liar.
It's no lie, Wharton. We saw it with our own eyes.
I don't care what you saw. I know that alfalfa wasn't for sale, to me or anybody else.
What makes you so sure of that?
I'll tell you what makes me so sure. And you can check with Bob Mullen's bank. Bob told me he'd made arrangements for a bank loan to buy 20 head of dairy cattle. That's why I'm sure. He was getting them in next month, and he needed that alfalfa for winter forage. He couldn't have sold it. Not to anybody.
This is David Bryan. Before we continue with Mr. District Attorney in the case of the Blood Harvest, here's an important message from my sponsor. And now back to David Bryan, starring as Paul Garrett, Mr. District Attorney.
A farmer had been brutally murdered with a pitchfork in a harvested field. His helper had stated that the crop of alfalfa from the field had been sold the day of the murder. But the brother-in-law of the slain man insisted that the crop had not been sold. By the time I got back to my office, there was more disturbing information.
Morgan left these plastic castings to the truck tracks yesterday afternoon.
Did they match the tire treads on Mullen's truck?
He says no. Mullen's tires have just been recapped. These are badly worn. He marked the spots with red ink, especially the crescent-shaped gouge mark.
Might have been the buyer's truck, Chief.
Yes, except that Slim Ferryman said that Mullen hauled the stuff away after loading it. If it was the buyer's truck, Slim would have known who the buyer was, at least a description. Come on, Harrington. Bring those tire track castings with him.
Where to this time?
Back to Mullen's farm. I'm going to find the truck those tire marks came from.
Mullen only had the one truck.
Well, some of his neighbors own trucks, too. I want to make sure none of them owns one with a crescent-shaped gouge in one of the tires.
I'm about walked out, Chief. Why are we crossing the fields when we could drive to each place?
Well, I don't want anybody to know what we're looking for.
Well, Richardson's place was clear. But we're lucky we didn't run into that dog of his. Well, this is Trent's place.
Yeah, looks like he moved his alfalfa crop, too. Fields are clear. Where's the house?
Just about making out, see? Right there through the trees.
Good. He'll keep us covered. Keep your eyes on the ground.
Right. Hey, hold it.
What?
Nothing. Tractor marks here. Not what we're looking for.
Loose straw on the ground over there. Might have been a loading spot. Move that way.
Yeah. Trent must have had a lot of bales stacked there.
Yes. He certainly did. And there are the truck marks.
Same tread as the casting, all right.
And there's our cousin-shaped mark.
That truck might be over in the barn.
Let it go for now. Send the lab crew out late tonight and get a casting right from the tire while Trent's asleep.
Are we going to drive all the way back into town?
No, no. We'll call them from the village and wait for them. Meanwhile, let's get off Trent's property before he sees us.
The cafe in the next block should have a phone.
All right.
Hey, look.
Coming out of the cafe, going for his car. We didn't have to be so careful out of Trent's place after all. He was here in the village.
Yeah. Too bad we didn't know that.
Well, it looks like Trent isn't the only one taking a day off.
Yeah. Slim Ferryman in there at the counter. They must have been together.
Well, let's go in.
Hello, Mr. Garrett. Mr. Harrington.
Hello, Slim.
Hiya.
You mind if we join you?
No, no, of course not. You got any line on who killed Mullen yet?
No. Too bad Mullen never mentioned the name of the man who bought his alfalfa.
Yeah, I wish he had.
You and Mullen go all through Korea together?
No. No, I never got overseas.
Oh, I thought you were war buddies.
Well, sure. Sure we were. I mean, I met Bob at a base hospital when he was shipped back. Bob Mullen was the best friend I ever had, you see?
Of course, Slim.
When you get the guy who killed him, I'd like to be there to watch when they strap the rat in the electric chair.
I know just how you feel. And I'll do my best to arrange it for you.
Well, I guess I better be going. Here's your money, mate. So long.
So long, Slim.
See you around.
Yes,
sir, baby. He let his teeth rattling there, Chief.
Yeah.
He was pretty frank about not being overseas with Mullen, though.
And he knew I could check his service record if he lied.
Oh, gosh. I forgot to call the lab.
Yes. But we're not going to wait from here. Call Miss Miller and tell her what we want.
Where are we going?
Back to Haskell's to pick up Dan Wharton. I need him.
Look, Mr. Garrett, I don't know where you're taking me, but I don't want to leave Ellie alone for long.
We'll get you back as soon as possible. You want to help us get the persons responsible for Mullen's death, don't you?
You know who did it?
We think so. But we need your help to prove it.
How much acreage did Mullen have in alfalfa? Like 7 or 8 to me.
8's right.
Know exactly how much the yield was?
Well, just about 2 tons an acre. 16 ton all told. That's a good yield for this year.
Well, you saw Trent's alfalfa acreage, Harrington. I'd say he cut about 6 acres, wouldn't you?
Gee, Chief, I wouldn't know.
I can tell you. It was 6 acres.
Well, how do you know, Wharton?
I bought Trent's alfalfa crop from my company. Saw him right after Mullen refused to sell.
Feed and grain companies keep a record of all their purchases, don't they?
Sure.
And the bales be identifying, I mean, are they tagged or stored in such a way that you could tell whom they were bought from?
Yes, they are.
What are you driving at, Chief?
Final proof to break Trent down. I want to know if Trent sold any more than 12 tons of alfalfa.
Okay, fellas. Okay, set it down here.
Thanks, men. That's all.
So he did sell more.
That's right, Wharton. This is one of the bales Trent sold to Prescott Grain and Feed.
Sold it the day after he sold his entire crop to you.
And the day after Mullen was murdered.
How much of it did he sell?
15 tons.
Just a little less than Mullen raised.
There are a dozen bales left on Mullen's field, remember? Now, you've got to help us. Is it humanly possible to prove that this alfalfa came from Mullen's fields and not Trent's?
Yes.
Stuff grown on adjoining acreage? How?
Not by the alfalfa itself, but the way it's baled. This stuff Trent sold to me is baled with 14-gauge wire.
And what about it?
This stuff he sold to Prescott's is baled with 16-gauge wire. And that's the wire Bob Mullen baled with, 16-gauge.
All right, Harrington. Now we're ready to pick Trent up. And he can tell us where Slim Ferryman fits. Come on.
Light just went on inside.
I saw it.
Oh, it's you fellas. I heard your car come up the road and I...
And you thought it was somebody else.
No, I didn't know who it was.
Oh, we thought you might have been expecting Slim Ferryman.
No. Why would Slim come here?
To take a few lessons in farming, perhaps. So you could show him how to raise 27 tons of alfalfa on 6 acres.
27?
You must know how to do it, Trent, because you sold 27 tons.
But 15 tons of it belonged to Bob Mullen. He baled heavier. He used 16-gauge wire while you used 14-gauge.
I bought Mullen's crop.
He turned down Dan Wharton and sold it to you?
I mean, I hauled it for him. He thought the price might be better someplace else.
Not enough to haul it an extra 30 miles to Prescott's. And besides, you made that sale the day after Mullen was killed.
I had to do it. I was in a trap. I was afraid Slim would kill me, too.
Did he kill Mullen? Were you an eyewitness?
Yes, I saw him do it. I never touched Mullen.
Where is Slim now?
I thought you were him when you drove up. He was going to come by sometime during the night. I've been holding Prescott's check for Mullen's crop. You see, Slim was going to pick it up, take it someplace tomorrow for cashing.
There's a car coming up the road now, Chief.
Handcuff Tent to that water pipe, quick.
But I didn't kill him, I didn't...
Mr., make it easy.
Let's get out there, Harrington.
Why not let them come to
us? He won't stop. You'll see our car and recognize it the minute he turns in behind the house.
He saw it. He's backing up the turn.
Get his tires.
That stopped him.
He's running for it. Move off to that side. The car is shielding him.
Stop running, Slim. You can't beat a bullet.
He's running into the barn.
What's that?
Down the stall there, I think.
Dark. I can't see.
Look out, Harrington!
I got him.
Yes. I think that's Trent's truck there. I'll turn on the headlights. Well, he's dead, Harrington.
Yeah, I didn't see him. I don't even know how I hit him. I just ducked when you yelled and something whizzed by and I fired.
Yeah, he was on the ladder to the loft.
What was it he threw at me?
This.
What is it?
Sickle. Dug into the stall post about 2 inches deep.
Yeah, I was standing right there, too. Felt that feed bag brush my face just as you yelled. It's a lucky thing you did.
Yeah, I'm afraid Slim Ferryman wouldn't agree with him.
Look where he landed.
Yes. Stall full of alfalfa. Let's get Trent and take him in. This is David Bryan. I hope you enjoyed this case from the files of Mr. District Attorney. I'll be back in just a moment after this message from our sponsor.
The star of Mr. District Attorney, David Bryan, with a word about the program you have just heard.
Slim Ferryman's death ended the case. Harry Trent entered a plea of guilty to murder in the second degree and is now serving a 20-year sentence. Now, this is David Bryan inviting you to join us when we present our next case based on the facts of crime from the file of Mr. District Attorney.
Mr. District Attorney was originated by Phillips H. Lord.
That's case closed for this week. Want to hear more from Barry Craig, Mr. District Attorney, more old-time radio in general, just visit the website at relicradio.com. You'll also find links there to everything else Relic Radio, like our forum, Shoutcast stream, all the other podcasts, and our donate button. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.